and play with us. Come and play with us, Daddy.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Forever and ever and ever.
Nobody wants to have their bubble burst, you know, and it's like, but at the same time, it's like, if you're just, I pity the person that, like, I mean, I guess if it's their uncle, I can understand why, but I pity the person that's like, this little blob on the thing is awesome. It's like, dude, it's just a little fucking blob, man. I've seen a million little blobs, you know, like, there's no, you know, it's, even I've seen, you know, it's not just, at first it was like, hey, that's a cool little blob, and then it was like, this is a little blob, but it's over my shoulder. Or it's like, this is a little blob, but it's right in front of my face. It's like, okay, so now we've moved on from just little blobs to, like, little blobs in key locations. Is that what we're doing now? And it's like, at the end of the day, it's just a fucking little blob. I don't know what to do with a little blob, man.
Right. I like to make it akin to this. If, you know, if somebody thinks they know how to fix their car and you're a mechanic, you probably know better than they do how to actually fix what it is they're fixing. Sure, putting just water in your radiator will keep your engine cool, but, you know, come November, December, you're going to be screwed without the antifreeze. And I think that that's the problem, is you start to tell people you might want to mix in a little bit of antifreeze with that water. Oh, I know what I'm doing. You know, that's the problem, is,
yeah.
And that's what people aren't willing to accept. You have to be willing to say, okay, I don't know everything, and I'd like to learn all the possibilities of what this could be before I say what I think that it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been saying on this show for a long time, it's okay to say you don't know. That's like, that's the whole point of the show. If I knew anything, I wouldn't be doing the show. I don't know shit. So that's why, you know.
And I think a lot of people,
that's why we do what we do.
This is why, you know, it would be hard to accept it as a science, is that people take the evidence that they get very seriously and very personally. And when someone says that that's not true, and I'm kind of telling you why it's not true, you know, usually, or you hope that it's in a good way, although oftentimes not, all of a sudden you're not attacking or you're not, criticizing the evidence. People feel as if you're attacking them or you're criticizing them because it's something very personal to them. Now, whether that's because it's
right.
a reflection of the way that they investigate or whether it's a reflection of the way that they interpret information, like, I know what I'm talking about. I know what an orb, I know the difference between a, you know, a water or a dust orb and a demonic entity right there. I know that difference. You know, it boils down to they think you're attacking them. And so I never look at pictures from people. You know, after I wrote a book about, you know, it's a horrible book, but I wrote a book called Picture Yourself Capturing Ghosts on Film, which is how to get the best results and how to, like, analyze
what's
real and
what's
not. This
the one where you said you should spend, like, fucking 8 days looking at your EVP.
No, that was not. If I could plug, that was my other book, Picture Yourself Ghost Hunting, which is a really good book, I think.
Okay.
It was almost like a folklorist approach, but, you know, people would want to show
you. You know what you should do? I've always wanted,
like,
if I ever, you should do, I've always wanted to do this. If you ever, if I ever write a book, I would do something silly like this, but, like, you should go to the bookstore, and if they have it, just, like, go to that page with the part you're talking about where you're, like, spend 3.5 times and just write in the book. Be like, I was totally wrong about this. Here's my email address. I'm really the author. Contact me, and I'll explain to you why that's not right. You know, just
put a little sticker there.
It'd be a cool
social
experiment.
Don't play with your kids.
Yeah,
you should take approximately 10 minutes. Go play with your kids.
Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting that you said that, Tim, because about ghost groups getting proliferating more, because it's just like that must be a case where I'm out of the bubble in a sense, because I remember, like I said, back when we were all doing those shows in Watertown, it was like I just remember a lot of the people that were ghost hunting. I don't want to name drop them anyway, because it's like. I don't remember their names, and it's kind of irrelevant, but it's like they had just sort of formed a ghost group. They were really excited about it, and I'm pretty sure, like, the group just dissolved. But I think what happens is maybe one or two people from those groups go, and they make connections and sort of, like, you know, the community just sort of grows from there in a sense. But it's like some people come, some people go, and people stick around. That's probably more happens.
The reason why you're not seeing it as much, though, is I think it's become less of people's identity. You know, back like 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, it was everything to people to put themselves out there as a paranormal investigator because the world thought it was so cool and unique and different that, you know, you would make your MySpace page all about yourself and your paranormal group. You know, that was kind of what was important.
Yeah.
You would have your Angel Fire site to be about your paranormal group. And that was what mattered to people. And now I think it's just a smaller part of their life. It's still something that they're into, but they don't feel the need to broadcast it out there to the world. So there's a lot of people that, you know, if I share something on social media and I'm friends with them through another way, they come back at me and say, well, I didn't know you were into the paranormal. I'm into the paranormal too. And it's become more of just something that is part of who makes up who they are as opposed to being the dominating aspect of their identity.
You know, if you try to connect with people on Twitter or other social media, there are so many less contacts you're making by finding, you know, the Bill Ricka Paranormal Society or this, you know, this or some kind of cool acronym. Like, those are not out there anymore, but what you're finding more of is, you know, my name's John and I'm a paranormal enthusiast. And those are the people that are out there connecting to it, you know, and those people are maybe forming loose bonds or loose groups to kind of do stuff with, but it's not this focus on, not as much of a focus as, you know, let's have a very formalized group, let's create a mission statement, let's create, like Tim
talked
before, the hierarchy and what everyone does, as opposed to, I think there are probably maybe, you know, more or as many people investigating, they just form looser bonds. And they're identifying themselves, more importantly, as themselves, who likes the paranormal as opposed to, you know, the resident tech guy of some certain group.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of like how it's been in a sense for me. I was never really part of a group or anything, but I you know, I've become friends with listeners from the area, and we don't go out and form a group or do anything like formal, but we'll, you know, just one-on-one, we'll go out for a few beers and just talk this shit out about what we're seeing and what we're hearing lately and stuff like that. It's like we never really felt the compunction, you know. I kind of think at one point I was like, I should sort of, like, put together sort of a small, you know, like an old ladies book club where we'll gather and just talk about this shit. And then I was like, you know what, nah, this what I'm doing now is working, you know. It's like this is... You know, I'm generating a lot of good ideas just hanging out with people and talking about shit without putting a name on it or doing anything, you know, like without formalizing it in any way. It's just like, you want to grab drinks? All right, cool. You know, and we talk about this stuff. So it's a lot easier than me. Like, the Stoughton Paranormalists will be meeting in the Stoughton Library lobby at 4, and then we'll be going to Chili's. It's like you don't have to do that. You don't have to post that on Facebook.
When you're able to do that, when you're able to just talk with people about stuff, you can actually have more interesting and introspective conversations than you can if you feel the need to kind of keep some level of, you know, factuality behind it. Like, like Chris and I have conversations where we just drop any all pretense and whatever stupid theory that you have, throw it out there. It doesn't matter because that might actually be what it ends up being. It's not about, like, oh, I have to impress this person with how much I know, and I have to act like I know about these things when I don't. It's just, it's no different than when, like, remember when you were, like, riding in the car with your friends when you were teenagers, and you're driving around at night, and all of a sudden you see, like, a shooting star, and you just turn to your friend, and you're like, dude, what would you do right now if you saw a fucking UFO? Like, those experiences anymore. Why do we have to be like, well, the first thing I would do is I would get out my recorder and I would start taking readings and results and I would, you know, file a formal complaint with MUFON. No, let's just go back to what would you do if that's happened to you?
Right.
And I think, you know, when you stop doing, when you stop being as evidence-based or talking about what is the best way to get evidence, and once again, I don't want to criticize that, just it's not my path anymore and I think it's not the ultimate path that you know, to truth, then all of a sudden you can start talking about, like, some of the things that Tim's, like, really been focusing on, like vortexes, you know what I'm saying, or, like, thought forms. Are we creating the paranormal? Now you can start to answer those questions, and those are so much more interesting puddles to get wet in, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well, I was going to say, just Tim was talking about throwing out, you know, crazy ideas. You came on the right show, because I'm always... You know, I'll throw out the dumbest, most insane idea I can, If it comes into my head while I'm doing the show, I'll say it, usually with the preface of, you probably think I'm an asshole, but, you know, what if when you go to work, your cat can turn invisible? It's like, we don't know that for sure. I mean...
Love Banal of America, because that's the stuff that you do. You know, you'll get somebody on like Dan Friedman or Jim Mars or Lauren Coleman or some of these legendary figures, and you'll start picking their brain and not just ask them questions like, so how did you get into this? And tell us about this. Tell us about that. Like, you throw out high concept ideas, and that's what we need to do. That's what this conversation should be. There's enough hacks out there trying to host their own radio shows that start off every show. I just did a show last week with this guy, Lonnie. He was great. And I told him, I said, I'm getting tired of hearing hosts start off shows with, so tell us how you got involved in the paranormal. Like, no, like, who cares how I got involved in the paranormal? Let's talk about what I think the paranormal. Let's talk about why I think this stuff happens. Let's talk about how I think that this stuff can happen to other people if they want it to happen. Those are the concepts that we should be talking about, not all of this revisionist stuff of what's the scariest thing that ever happened to you. You know what? It doesn't matter because it didn't happen to you. Let's talk about how we can make a scary thing happen to you. That's what matters.
Yeah, and by the way, that thing was 7 years ago. It has no reflection of who I am right now or
right.
what I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
I know. Like, I've been on shows where people ask me, like, for the background, and it's like, how long do I have, dude? It's like, it's complicated. You know, I got into this all excited, then I turned cynical, and now I'm like, I don't know what I am, but like a lot's happened in the last like almost 15 years. So,
and I think,
you know,
to be honest with
you,
I think Tim does a really great job of that, and I think Tim has a really great approach from that as well. When on Spooky South Coast, you know, where he has. You know, I all the time I get people who say that when we're booking them, I also have a list of questions in case you need them, and here's this, and I go, Tim don't need it. Tim Weisberg, that is. He doesn't need it, like, because you know what? Like, that's the conversation you had with 7,000 other people. Like, instead, what the show should be, and what both of you, Tims, do very well is, like, all right, let's talk about, you know, what you do, what your ideas are. Let's talk about this. And what happens is most people who are in this field who are the kind of people you would want to interview, they can talk for as long as you want them to talk about their shit. Like, you just need to guide the conversation. You just need to bring it back. You just need to ask probing questions. They're going to get it because, you know, chances are if you've got a good guest on, you've got that guest because they've got an idea that you want to present to the audience. And so you just got to ask the right kind of questions, because no one really wants to know about how that person, when they were, guess what? Every person says, well, you know, when I was a kid, I was really into In Search Of, and then da 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 da, you know, and they kind of, we all have the same stepping stones, you know? All right, we got that out of the way. Now let's talk about, you know, some interesting stuff, because, you know, I brought you on because you have this idea. And it's the same way. Like, if I'm meeting with people, I don't want to know about your group. I'm talking about, like, you know, talking to people, not on one of the shows. I don't really want to know about the group. I don't want to know how you formed. What I want to know is, you guys were at this place. Hey, what happened there? What's the backstory behind it? Those are some really interesting what do you think that means? Or, like, well, wait a minute. You went to these two different places and you experienced a very similar thing. Why do you think that is? Is it because it was in the same county? Like, do you think, like, there's some interesting thing going on, like people believe that they should act a certain way when they're dead because they're brought up in this kind of area? You know, like, those are questions that are much more intriguing to play with than just, you know, well, tell me a little bit about yourself. This ain't Tinder. I don't want to date you. No offense to either of you, Tims. You know, you're both handsome men. I don't want to date you. I'm swiping left on you. You know, I want to know about, like, what are the ideas that are out there?
You don't want to date me. You just want to use.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know,
wow.
They're
I didn't know it was going to take such an ugly turn this evening. Well, it's funny you say that. Yeah, because I kind of have a thumbnail rule where it's like, first-time guest, give us the bio of the background. But once you're on for a subsequent appearance, if you're so fortunate enough to be invited, you know, then it's like, people, if they want to know your thumbnail, then they got to go back to your first appearance. That's like how it works. I mean, I don't have time to catch people up to speed. I presume people have been, you know, I just treat the audience as if they've been along for the ride with me the whole time. So it's like, they know Balzano's background. They know Tim's background. They don't really need, you know, we don't need to hear, like Chris, like you were saying, Chris, like the whole, it's actually what's really kind of a template. Because as you were saying that, it was like, yeah, it's pretty much what happened with me, you know. Unsolved mysteries, that kind of thing. And next thing you know, it's like I'm mixed up in this shit, you know. But I was thinking it would be funny We should have a mutual agreement between the three of us that the next hack show we're on. If it's a good show, you know, you can take a pass. But if you're on a hack show, when they bust out that first question, just be like, you know, that's not even interesting at all. How did you get into this?
We have this thing that we do where if we're on a show with a host who is a hack, we just take over the show. We'll just take things over and start asking the host questions and just start,
yeah,
you know, answering our own, you know, asking our own questions of ourselves. And we've done it numerous times. And I always listen to Chris when he's on shows and say, oh, yep, nope, you got to do it, Chris. And then sure enough, it kicks right in.
Well, it's interesting. I'm
trying not to step on your toes.
Oh, you're trying to take over my show now? You call me a hack?
So this is Balzano of America?
Well, it's interesting. What's that? Yeah, Balzano. There you go. Yeah,
Balzano of America.
Uh-oh. Turn on the NWO music. But, yeah, no, it's interesting because this is something the three of us can talk about because, like I said, I'm an outsider in the ghost realm, so I'm kind of feeling around, you know, like a blind man in an orgy when it comes to talking about that stuff. But with podcasting, it's like I've been in this for a long time. You guys have been in this for a long time. It's like it's kind of like how I perceive the ghost hunting to be, even though I was wrong about that, where it's like it's a lot of the same way. You see shows come up, you know, they got a logo first before they have a show, and, right, you know, and they last maybe all of like 6 months, you know, or not even that, or, you know, it's like they don't really have what it takes to put the time and the dedication in or the interest and everything. And then you see, I've seen some shows kind of come up in the last few years that have stuck. I think that it's gotten better in the last like 2 or 3, maybe 4 years, where it's like I think a lot of the Johnny Come Latelys have tried to do it and have, you know, who came along in the last 3 or 4 years, you know, have kind of stuck and established themselves as far as like this next wave. I mean, because Spooky South Coast, Banal of America, we've been around for a long, long time at this point, you know. I mean, we've been doing this for like, I don't know how long you guys have, but we've been doing this here for like 11 years, so, you know, it's a long time.
And what's funny about it is, like, we always say, you know, the cream will rise to the top and eventually the pretenders will go away, but a lot of the pretenders hang around for a long time. And, you know, like, you're still on? You're still, like, every Thursday night you guys still just all get together and do this? It's just, I don't know, but if it's what people are passionate about, there's a voice for that now. Everybody has a platform now. But the problem is with it is, the way I see it is, I mean, I love radio. I love doing all the things that I do. I love writing for TV, but I don't do it because I just want to satisfy my own Jones for doing it. I do it because I feel like there's still stuff that I want to experience, stuff I want to learn, stuff I want to learn about, and information that I want to share with people. And I think if you just use that kind of approach to not only interviewing someone, but just in everything that you do, you know, just use yourself as a conduit for information and experience to get out to other people, then you'll do all right. It's when you start putting your own ego into it, which too many people do. The paranormal is littered with people who were the unpopular kids in school that nobody ever wanted anything to do. And they get into this stuff because they didn't have anything better to do on a Friday or a Saturday night. And then the next thing you know, this becomes their little group and their little clique, and they don't know how to handle the social responsibility that comes with it. And it just becomes ego-driven. And it's not about I want to go out there and research the unknown and help people understand these strange things that are happening to them. It's I want to get on TV, and this is the way that I can do it.
Right.
You know, Tim and I had back in the day, probably, 7, 8 years ago now, we had a PR firm we were trying to start. And the first few people who approached us – called Pair Relations. The first few people who approached us were, I've got this book, and I want to promote this book. And we're like, okay, cool, we can do that. Like, we can get you on different shows. We can, you know, kind of have an approach for how you should be doing things. And then, like, you know, very quickly it became, I want me to be a star. So it wasn't I was trying to promote, I want to create me. Like, I want to be on a TV show, or I want to do, and it's kind of like, well, I don't know how to make you famous. Like, you famous, like, well,
right,
what do you do? You know, and that's a really difficult thing. And I think like Tim's saying, you know, so many people wrap up their identity in this thing, and it might come from when you're the outsider and all of a sudden the outside thing is cool. There's a, you know, it, and if it's something that you do, you're like, I know I do it better than that person because I've been doing it longer. I've been doing it, you know, more engaged in it. Like, that's what becomes really difficult to fight that temptation to want to be bigger than you are. And because, especially because you see the average person. You know, it's thinking that you sing really well and going on American Idol. You see the average, what seems like the average person get a TV show, and you think that that's attainable. But what you don't realize is, you know, that's your one person. Guess what? It's like the NFL, man. There are a million people who investigate the paranormal, and there's not that many shows. It just seems like there are. You know, people can't, you know, people, it becomes really a hard thing to approach this from a I want to get famous standpoint. You know, those people who were on the shows, they were recommended by people. Why are they recommended by people? Because they were go-to people for them in the first place. Or they were hot.
Well, one of the things about it, too, is like people always say to me, well, how come this guy gets to have a show and this group has a show and this person's on TV? I'm better than them. I'm smarter than them. And I have to, like, explain to people, okay, first of all, people don't want to watch folks on television that they feel are smarter than them. Like, that's just something that, that's something that is, you know, that's why shows like, you know, Honey Boo Boo and all that stuff become popular, because people like to watch people that they feel like they're better than. And that's why some folks are watching these goofy shows that are out there. But some of the ones that are good, that are smart, are because they are not, you know, they're taking you on down this road at a level at which everybody can understand. And not everybody who does paranormal research can do that. You know, Chris, you and I are both writers, and we both have been taught. We've both done, you know, whether it be books or newspaper articles or whatever, we're taught to write to a certain grade level. You know, we're told to write to like a sixth grade level. And so that's where the good paranormal researchers that are good for television come in. It's not that they have a sixth grade education. It's that they're able to take the information that they're putting out there and break it down so that somebody with a sixth grade education can understand. And that's where a lot of paranormal researchers get frustrated, because they say, no, 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 you should be up here with me. I want to talk about high concept things, and I want you to be at this high concept with me. But the way to get people on board with what it is that you're saying is to give it to them in an easily digestible manner so that you can build up to those higher concepts.
Yeah, and, right, and exactly. I can see that when I talk to people about what I do and when I talk to about ideas that I have, I can very quickly tell whether they want the cool little spooky experience that I had, or whether they want to really talk about ghosts, or whether they really want to talk about urban legends or something. And then I can, like, okay. And then, you know, and then I got scared and something jumped out. And they're like, oh, that's awesome. And I'm like, those were not the people who I could talk to about those high concepts. And what you find is there are not enough of those people to sustain a TV show like Ghost Stalkers or something else that had these really great ideas that were being presented that people weren't necessarily ready for, even though that show itself also had a great amount of interesting, exciting things that were going on with it, and stuff that was entertaining to watch and spooky and creepy to watch. They're, you know what I'm saying, like, people want, they want kind of what they want. They want what's on their level. So it's difficult to write to that. It's difficult to be trapped in that. And so, you know, one of the things that I've experienced is almost paralysis with that, because I want to talk about these things. I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about just what happened. I want to talk about the higher ideas. And that's one of the reasons why I left the paranormal, was I felt no one wanted to hear that shit anymore. Like, no one wanted to talk about that stuff. And so it was like, well, you know what? If this is what you guys are interested in, that's fine. You know, that's not where I am, so I'm leaving. And I think those interesting people who are still in the field, someone like Jeff Belanger, they've come to terms with that, and they don't care. They want to present their ideas, and those are the people who end up being trailblazers.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really, like, you know, you can't, like, leave. I mean, it's inadvisable, I guess, in a sense, in my opinion, where it's like you can't really – if you want to talk high concepts, it's the same way with UFOs and shit, what you guys are talking about with this thing, sort of with these TV shows and stuff, too. You know, you see these magazine shows or whatever they are, you know, like recreations. It's always, like, famous UFO cases. And, you know, the big complaint is, like, where are the high concept ideas? Versus it's always just, like, ETs and stuff, you know? But,
you can do your own, just do your own shit. That's kind of my advice to people. It's like, you know, if you're going to do something, and if you want to be different, by all means, please be different and do something different. And if people don't want to hear it, it doesn't matter. There are still some people that want to hear it, and, you know, who cares? Like, you shouldn't be searching for an audience unless you're, unless having an audience is all you really fucking want, you know? And
right,
it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be your motivation.
People ask me on a daily basis, you know, what do I have to do to get on TV? How do I get on TV? Listen, I think at last count, I've been involved in like 6 potential casted projects, and none of them have gone. So I'm not the person to ask about that. You know, it's not about being on TV. If being on TV is your goal, your ultimate goal, then, you know, try out for American Idol. Try out for America's Got Talent, because it's
yeah,
it's
Big
not,
Brother. Or, yeah. If they had any talent, they would already wouldn't want to be on TV. So they clearly they're more set for like a Survivor type show, you know, where it's just like we just need fresh bodies to throw on an island.
And
know?
Guess what? Like if you're out there doing stuff, there is an audience no matter what you're doing, no matter what your approach to this is. Talking to those people, like trying to reach people on whatever level you're at. You know, and my co-host, Nyla Chris, has a really great perspective on this because I'll be looking at our numbers, and I can have Spooky South Coast podcast numbers up on one screen and our podcast numbers up on another screen, and I'm looking at them, you know, and it's kind of depressing, right, because Spooky South Coast is established. It's like it's people have been subscribing to it for years. People have been going back in the archives, or they binge it like Netflix, and they find it, and then they listen to 100 other episodes over the course of the next month. And I look at that, and I get really frustrated, and I'm like, oh, but I'm, you know, we're doing some interesting, new interesting things. Like, why can't we get – and she looks at me, and she says, you know, dude, this episode had 500 people listen to it. Imagine if you were talking to a room of 500 people about your ideas. You know?
Yeah,
or,
for sure.
Well, yeah, only 100 people listen to it on, like, the first day, and that's frustrating when you know the potential for some of these other shows that are out there. And she'll have that, like, 100 people? 100 people stopped their day today to listen to us talking about some stupid shit in a graveyard. You know?
And I think that people would even care, yeah.
Right. When
right.
We
I mean, hand to God,
dude.
That perspective. I think if you can gain that perspective, it's really healthy, and it really will push what everyone else is doing forward as well.
We were absolutely,
yeah, because you're on. It's kind of like the idea of going in on the ghost hunt without the equipment. It's like you're unencumbered by expectations, and
right.
You're free to do whatever you want. I mean, I was just going to say, like, hand to God, folks. This is absolutely true. I couldn't even tell you how many people listen to this show. I don't look. You know, and all the people who, like, either hear about the show or are asking to be on the show, and they're like, oh, that's a big show. It's like, I couldn't fucking tell you, dude. I assume it's a big show, but I don't have any idea how many people listen to the show. I mean, the only time I ever worried really about the listenership was, like, last year when I stopped doing the show for pretty much the year, and I was bringing it back this year, and I was like, oh, geez, I probably lost a whole bunch of listeners. And it was like, who gives a fuck? You know,
yeah.
If they bailed because I wasn't doing a show, you know, fuck them. You know, this final season's for the real fans, the ones who stuck around, you know, who knew I'd be coming back with something outrageous and awesome, which is this final season. So to me, it's like the idea of needing that validation, that's a mistake, folks. Like, you don't want to fall into that trap.
Right. I think the best shows and the best investigators and the best people who are involved in this are the ones that understand that it's not about anybody else but yourself. It's not about anything. I mean, it's different. When I say this, like, don't be a paranormal
investigator. Not in an egotistical way.
Right. Well, I mean, don't try to be a person that's going into somebody's house to help them with a haunting in their home and only be thinking about yourself. You know, that's a bad approach. Not everybody
right.
is geared to doing residential cases. I know I'm not. But when people are looking at this and saying, like, listen, I don't care about all that other outside noise. I'm just on my own journey here, and I've got to figure some things out for myself, and I got to just do things that I'm interested in and I'm entertained in. You will find things in your life that hold your interest for a set amount of time, and then eventually they might fade away. You might find something that becomes a lifelong passion. You never know which way it's going to pull you, but the fact is you have to put yourself into it and fully invest yourself, and that has to be what is your motivating factor. If I tried to get into things just because I thought other people would think a certain way about me, I'd never like any stuff that I do. You know how much shit I used to take from people even in 1990-1999 for liking wrestling when everybody was walking around in Austin 316 shirt? But yet I decided, hey,
yeah.
I think I'm going to put myself out there with my face in the newspaper every week writing about this stuff. And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be doing the things that I am now. So sometimes you just got to take that leap of faith, but make sure that you're taking that leap of faith because it's what you want to do and because it's something that's drawing your passion.
That's right. Like Steve Harvey says, you just have to jump. I don't know if you know that. Check that out. Go on YouTube. Look up Steve Harvey Jump. You'll be blown away. He's the man. I'm a secret huge Steve Harvey fan. So I got someone sent me
that. I guess
it's
not a secret now.
I was like, what? No, actually, it's a running joke in a sense because I'll name drop Steve Harvey whenever I can. But yeah, there's some like crazy motivational video by Steve Harvey called Jump that's like it makes you want to like run through a brick wall. It's like that good where you're like, fuck yeah, man, I can conquer the world. So I recommend. And the point and that what he says is you're never going to be happy unless you just make that leap of faith. You know, and pursue like your passion. And if you don't pursue that passion, you're never going to be happy in life. You know, you may be successful or you may get by, but you're never going to really know like what your full potential could have been.
Right.
So it's good stuff.
Are you Neil deGrasse
Tyson?
Man. Or, you know, you got to make up your mind.
What's that?
I said, are you Neil deGrasse Tyson? You were or are you a Kardashian?
Oh, man, that's a tough choice now. I don't know. That's a tough choice. Those Kardashians have a good life.
Yeah, that's the question. Yeah, who's living?
Yeah, Neil deGrasse. Yeah, I don't know. I don't like Neil deGrasse Tyson because he's, like, super skeptical. Not that I blame him, but it's like, I don't need all that, man. I have my own self-doubts about all this shit. I don't need you confirming it.
Kind of a dick.
Yeah, he is kind of a dick. A lot of skeptics are. It's too bad because, like, I've reached out to them and tried to work with some skeptics, and it's like I've always been disappointed. You know, they don't play on the up and up or whatever that means.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's a imbalanced deck or something. There's an expression. I can't come up with it.
Have you worked with Ben Radford? I like Ben Radford.
Yeah.
No, I haven't had Ben Radford on the show. No, I've only had like one or two skeptics, but.
He's a skeptical, but he's not an asshole about it. So, I've always liked him.
Yeah, no, I'm sure I've heard good things about him. So I can't really say but it's like
I'm just name dropping.
Just name dropping. Well, it's a good name to drop.
Though.
We're talking about skeptics,
right?
There
I mean,
go.
I was just celebrity this
ahead.
Past week. So you know, let me tell you about all my friends.
Oh, I did
want
to ask you.
TV
I apologize.
Show coming out?
I heard. I apologize to Chris. Although Chris probably has heard this story already, but since a lot of my listeners are wrestling fans and the rest hate the fact that I talk about it sometimes, this is the perfect opportunity to bring this up because I saw the picture on your Facebook, Tim. What the fuck were you doing with Chris Jericho?
What? You're not going to believe this if I tell you. We were talking about the Bridgewater.
I have a pretty good idea that you were putting together a sizzle reel or something like that.
Yeah, a while ago, right?
Last
year we did a sizzle reel for a possible show in the Bridgewater Triangle that didn't go anywhere. But I got the chance to meet with Chris Jericho, and actually he interviewed about my experiences in the Triangle and what I thought about the Triangle. And, you know, I got to actually talk to one of my heroes for a few minutes. And I don't geek out very often about things, but that was one thing that I couldn't help but geek out about because I've been a fan of that guy since before anybody else knew who he was when he was toiling away in the cruiserweight division of WCW. And I said, someday this guy is going to be a huge star. He's going to have to go to the WWF now for me to do it. But a huge star. And I was right on the money with that. So I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, I was in the same. I think, yeah, we were part of that same sort of like fan. Smark community back in the day where it was like, if Chris Jericho would just go to WWF, he'd be the next big star. And it was like, it actually turned out that way. So,
right. And I
he's had an amazing career.
I ruined that when I predicted that the next big breakout star would be Lash LaRue. That went nowhere.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's a Sean David Morton level prediction. We're thinking about you, Sean David Morton, wherever you are on the run. Did you know about that, Sean David Morton?
I was following it along with on social media, so.
Yeah, he's on the run from the feds. Oh, man. I don't think he's listening, but it would be great if he was. He's somewhere in a shanty town right now, like, hey, thanks, guys. yeah, that's cool. Well, it's funny because I don't know about you, but it's a weird thing because I'm friends with Sinister Minister Jim Mitchell from the wrestling world.
Jim has emailed
Facebook.
He's telling me how much he likes Spooky Falco.
Yeah, and I've talked to him a few times, and it's like it's very humbling because it's so weird. And, you know, after we just went on this huge rant about, oh, you shouldn't want to be famous and shit, and it's not like that. It's very jarring because, like, Jim even said, he's like, I just want to ask you a million things. And it's like, I want to ask you a million things, dude. You know, it's like we're each fans of each other in a weird way. And that's one of the cooler parts of this when you run into somebody that you're like, holy shit, you like what I do? Like, that's jarring, man.
Chris and I both experienced the same thing with the recent passing of our Gary Patterson, who was pretty much, you know, one of our huge heroes in this genre, just as a writer and as a person and just a fantastic being. And we got an email from one of his close personal friends who told us, oh, no, he talked about you guys all the time. And, like, that's very humbling to look at somebody who you say, this is somebody I idolize, and he actually thought, you know, strong feelings about me. And Chris, I know that that's had the same effect on you as it did on me.
Yeah, because, you know, he was such a nice guy, and you'd heard so many good things about him, and other people, you know, said, we were able to talk. And so, you know, especially right at that time when he passed, it's the bloom seemed to be a little bit off the rose because I was like, oh, well, maybe he was just a really nice guy and made everyone feel that way. And then when we get this feedback that he actually was telling other people that, you know, he loved being on the show or that he thought were really great people, you know, it was really touching. It was almost kind of like, you know, a pat on the back from beyond the grave because it was like, wow, you know, like we, you know, in – I always do a whole lesson with my kids where I'm like, go and email your hero. Go and email someone. Who knows? Go, you know, hit him up on Twitter, like with something personal or search them out. You know, I've been able to talk to all the people who were on my Mount Rushmore as it shifted. I've emailed or I've called. Jeff Belanger used to be on my Mount Rushmore until I realized what a big jerk he was, right? And now him and I are good friends. Like, there are other people, some of them have been good experiences, some of them have been bad, but, like, you know, go out there and engage those people, and it's really weird to find out that sometimes, like, they're into your stuff. Like, they've heard of you before, or they've read your book or something like that, and they, you know, I find this when I'm booking guests, for Spooky South Coast sometimes, people will be like, oh, my word. You know that, like, when I was doing research, like, I read your book, and that was one of the things. Or I used to listen to Spooky South Coast when I was, you know, working on this thing, early project of mine. I can't believe you're actually approaching me to be on the show. And it's like, we're not that popular, dude. We're not that important. Like, we're not stars or anything like that, especially, you know, not me. Push you off to Tim. He's the star. But, like, you know, we find this all the time that these people who have influenced us are also being influenced by us, and that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah,
that's one of the great parts about doing this kind of thing. Go ahead, Tim.
I had an experience a couple of weeks ago at the Middleborough Paracon, which was, you know, this local event happened that they brought in. Nick Roth was there from Ghost Adventures and Paranormal Lockdown for something else he was doing, and they kind of piggybacked on that with this Paracon. So, you know, we're upstairs standing there because Nick's a friend of mine because I worked on Ghost Stalkers for him. And we're standing up there amongst the celebrities. You know, the second-tier celebrities that were the guests of the Paracon are standing up there with people that are on, you know, paranormal TV shows that are hits now, like Elizabeth Saint and Katrina Weidman and Nick Roth. And we're just, like, kind of hanging out in the back. But in this huge line of people waiting to meet these three stars, people are like, oh, that's Tim over there. Oh, that's Stephanie Burke over there. Oh, you know, that's John Bright. And people are, like, recognizing us. And that was just very weird. When there was a kid who, you know, he's got some issues, and when people were saying, you know, he wants to meet you, it's going to make his day to go over and meet you, I was like, me? Like, he's waiting in line to meet Nick Roth. Like, why does he want to meet me? But you realize that people look at you as being somebody that they feel approachable with, you know? Like, they feel like you're the one who is kind of the the conduit from where they are to where people like Nick are. And that's very humbling to realize that people put you in that light, because, you know, I still have to come to work every day, do my regular thing. I still have to go home and wash dishes, and, you know, it's just a regular person. You can make a difference one way or another.
Yeah.
Like, that, Tim, you get people who say, you know, that Banal of America is like their release like that. You know people that say, you're responsible for opening my mind to things that I never would have thought of before. And it's humbling to have to play that kind of a role. And you almost want to be like Wayne and Garth and just get down on your knees and say, we're not worthy. We're not worthy.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, it's like we're like the girls next door. We're not the famous ones, so we're the attainable paranormal celebrities. So, yeah. Well,
yeah, I get
it's
the exact
been a wild
opposite.
Ride, man. It's been. Go ahead, Chris.
I get the exact opposite. When I go places, people ask me if they can get a picture, and literally this has happened to me, and I go, sure. And
they
hand me the
camera,
and they put their arm around Jeff Belanger. They go, okay, take the picture. So I'm like, that happened to us in the Bridgewater Triangle documentary. I'm like, dude, I'm on screen right now. I'm right over there. Is it a focus? Can take 5 or 6 of them for us, please. Whatever, dude. So I got the exact opposite. So someday I'll be where you guys are.
Next time, just take a selfie and hand them back the camera. like a mic drop moment. Be like, all right, bro, there you go. There's your picture, buddy. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, man, it's been crazy. I mean, it's hard to really. What I like about Spooky South Coast is you guys have integrated some video into the thing right now. It's like people can watch you. It's like Imus kind of style. Is that still happening with the show?
Yeah, we came up with this idea a couple of years ago. See, we've always kind of had to form our own technological advances here because it seemed like what we wanted to do, the station didn't really catch up with. We were trying to stream audio over the internet of the show before they actually had streaming capability. So we were doing it like in 2007 with Matt Costa coming in here, starting the show, flying home, flying back to Wareham to my house 20 minutes down the road, streaming what was going on the radio over the computer through a microphone from a boombox, flying back here to finish the show.
Oh, my God.
We were doing all kinds of weird stuff to try to make this happen. And a couple of years ago, we came up with the idea of doing live streaming video. And the original idea was that it was just going to be a webcam that you could watch while you were listening to the show on the radio or on the internet. And we just realized over the years that we could expand it more and more. So now we have multiple cameras in studio. We have graphics. We have all kinds of different things that we can bring into it. We do a green screen once in a while. And it's become something that has become so successful on YouTube and such an integral part of what we do that actually starting this week, we are submitting it to the local cable access station every week, and they're going to start running it. And we're looking at the possibility of putting it out to either more cable access stations or maybe getting it on something like Amazon.
Yeah, because it's different. Like I said, it's hard to imagine where this is going, but it seems like the video thing is the next. And I'll credit my buddy Jeff Ritzman, who sort of like observed this with me in a conversation off the air a few months ago, but it's like, yeah, it seems like video is really the next stage in a lot of this stuff, especially because it's easier to do your own videos. Wait, you know, it's kind of like video is, I think, it's kind of like just about right before the podcast, like at the stage right before podcasting kind of exploded. You know what I mean? It's still, if it's still complicated for a moron like me, for a technophobe like me, then I'm still not there yet. But even I'm starting to do video, and that's how I know, like, you know, I'm like if your mom starts using slang. So I think, like, it's getting to the point where video is getting even more, you know, prevalent, and it's going to be the sort of the next wave of a lot of the stuff. And to throw it back to what Chris said is that it's all cyclical, so, you know, people will get their fill of the video, and then you know what's going to be hot all of a sudden? Fucking books.
Books.
You know, and
our
we'll minds,
waiting.
You know, we're going to all be like, I don't know how old you guys are, maybe like 10 years or so, we're all going to be like in our 50s or late 40s, and we're going to be like, books, man, they're back. This is great. Books are back, you know. People are sick of carrying around a phone and watching videos. They just want to read books, so. You know, hold out hope to all those authors out there.
I think one of the things that video has done for Spooky South Coast, too, is that especially now that it's playing live on YouTube, like that kind of technology exists, and you can have the chat room running via YouTube, is that I've seen an increase of people viewing the show and getting involved in the chat room, you know, or at least being involved in the moment. You know, we used to have it on Ustream, we used to have it on a few other services, and we never seemed to get as much audience participation unless it was like a controversial guest or something like that. I pop in because I can't always be there because, you know, I'm not live on the air. I pop in and I see 47 people are currently watching it, you know, and some of those people are talking back and forth. And, you know, the strong personalities are there, and as they are in every chat room or, you know, they're – But I'm like, I take a step back and I'm like, wow, 47. I remember when, you know, we would have the same five people and we knew we were recording it because it was part of the integrity of the show to be in a studio. But then also we knew that it was being listened to on podcast, you know. And now it's that video element, I think, has really drawn people in. But it's so much easier for them to access it because they're just going to YouTube. They're on YouTube anyway, watching videos of cats. Like, why not watch Tim instead?
I know that we've made
right,
it, Chris,
exactly.
Because, you know, not only do we have some of the paranormal, quote-unquote, celebrities watching the show, you know, John Tenney watching it, Dustin Parry, Porter, all these people are Amy Bruni, tuning in, watching the show every week on the live stream. That's not what impresses me. I knew we made it when J.C. fucking Webster started showing up in our chat. That's when I knew that we had made it.
Oh,
with
wow.
The guy who harasses Art Bell and George Norrie tunes in and listens to our show on Saturday nights and is in the chat room spouting his JC crap that he always says on the air, and now he's spouting in our chat room. That's when I knew that we finally hit the big time.
Well, there you go. So SpookySouthCoast.com, that's the website, right?
Yes, it is. That's the way to get it. And also now we have the free Spooky South Coast app. You can watch and listen to the show right there.
There you go.
Smart women join in the chat room and everything and all that stuff, so...
Nice, nice. And Chris, what's your hub now? Tripping on Legends.
My hub.
Right.
Yeah, it's trippingonlegends.wordpress.com. But if you go to tripping on, you know, www.facebook.com/trippingonlegends.
Jesus.
Now, which is really encouraging, if you just type in tripping on legends, it's one of the first thing that comes up. So it's not legend tripping; it's tripping on legends. Those are our main things. We're looking to get we're looking to maybe hit up John Horrigan for a shorter URL for Tripping on Legends. But for right now,
he probably already owns
WordPress site.
Yeah, he owns all 12 of the different variations of Tripping on Legends. I'm sure.
So
yeah.
So
yeah.
Right now, it's still trippingonlegends.wordpress.com is probably the best way. But like I said, the Facebook is what we're probably most active on.
My favorite moment of this entire
interview.
You giving your web address
and
saying Jesus when you give it out.
This is the three-way dance. This is why it's so hard to pull off. Go ahead,
Chip.
It's your show, Tim. Go ahead.
No. Oh, no. I thought you were going to make a point there. I don't know. We all cross-talked, so.
No, just pointing out my favorite was your reaction to his web address. That was the best.
Oh. Yeah, it was polluted. Does someone actually own trippingonlegends.com, or have you not been able
they
to?
They do not. No, I was just joking. They do not. So if you want to GoFund me the money to make
thing,
it,
dude, what are you waiting for? Now,
get a website.
You guys, we're like right on the edge of the thing. I just had one more question, and it may turn into like more. So can you just kind of dribble on a little bit longer, like 15 minutes or something like that?
If need be.
Did,
anything
I
mean, for you?
I don't see why not. My I can't. So.
Pretty soon they're gonna have you like cleaning the rooms in the studio, Tim. They're gonna be like, "All right, dude, enough. Get out of wherever the room you're in now. You gotta start working." No, I guess because the only thing I wanted to briefly touch on at the very end was and I'm glad you guys mentioned our Gary Patterson because you guys did an awesome tribute show and I didn't get a chance to call in and. As I was saying to Chris before the show started, it was like the news about him passing away came out like on a Saturday morning, and amazingly and eerily, he was scheduled to be on you guys' show the following Saturday, which is like chilling in a lot of ways. But just with the nature of the world nowadays, I had kind of, I wouldn't say I'd forgotten, but it had slipped out of my mind by the time I did the show on Tuesday, so I never even really mentioned it, nor if I did, it was sort of like in passing, but yeah, we had him on the show. He was a great dude, and just a huge loss, because he was such a great fucking storyteller, and a wealth of really unique, and I think important information, because no one really... There's only a handful of people, like, who even know about this rock and roll folklore, and I'm willing to bet, like, kind of like how we talked about there's subsequent generations of people in this stuff. I bet you that if you were out now looking for, like, a rock and roll folklorist, you would find anyone that's, like, new is just basing their shit on R. Gary Patterson. So,
yeah.
You know, and maybe there's a couple other people that are still, that kind of came along with him and were friends with him and sort of know the stuff, but... You know, it's like a whole vein of cool shit was lost with R. Gary Patterson passing, and it's really sad, folks. I was also saying to Chris before the show started, and maybe you can speak to this, Tim. It's just eerie how many people I've had on the show over the years that have passed away. It's like I think I've had more guests on the show pass away than like people I actually know. Who've died like over the last 10 years of you know that I've been doing the show. So and
before you booked
Gary Patterson was what's that?
Why didn't you tell us that before you booked us? Now.
I know. Well, I have both of you on now, so it's even more like you're even more in the danger
That's
zone.
Crap.
But yeah, RGP was one of a kind, man, and it's a really big loss and you know, that's all I want to say about that. It's kind of makes me very sad to think about.
If you add to that the list of people we've approached who have rejected us and not wanted to be on our show and have since passed, you know, that list becomes huge. So not only our guests, but our rejected guest list is a huge family of people that we've lost in the past 10 years.
That's screw you, Hans Holder.
Oh man. The only I wanted to make that point. And the last sort of like I guess question thing was just because when you were talking about this, Chris, I felt like oh shit, I should have circled back a little bit to this because even though we laughed about like the bio background part, I guess because this is an exciting project and I like what you're doing a lot and I want you to kind of explain it a little like what. When you say legend tripping, I think people can kind of figure it out, but I also feel like we're doing a disservice to the idea by not sort of, like, explaining what this is. Like I said, I think we kind of danced around it, but we never really kind of, like, put a fine point on sort of the concept of legend tripping.
Well, it's a play – tripping on legends is a play on legend tripping. So I like to call it tripping on legends because, I mean, also embracing the mistakes of that are going along and the failures that we have doing this. But it's, mm-hmm. The idea is that there are a lot of ghost stories out there that they may be true, they may not be true, but they've gotten this shell around them that's filled with urban legend and folklore. That a true haunting may happen, may not happen, but we've pushed so much of our storytelling onto it. We've pushed kind of the way that we view ghosts. And so you take something like the Redheaded Hitchhiker in Massachusetts, right? So that's common ground for all three of us. Those initial sightings of the Redheaded Hitchhiker may have happened or may not have happened. But in that time, since 1994, when New England Ghost Files came out, so many people have wanted to touch that story, and so many people have told and retold that story that there is this... It's its own beast, right? And so a paranormal investigator would say, well, cut through that shit, right? Just get to it. Does the ghost exist? Does the ghost not exist? Can we videotape it? Can we, you know, get a reading from it? And Tripping on Legends is really about being like, who gives a fuck? Dude, people are telling really cool stories about this. You know what we should do? We'll go out. We'll go to that site. We'll try to do every single ritual that we hear people online are doing about it or that people are telling about it, and we'll see if something happens. And you know what? We'll act as kind of like They can't go out, someone can't go out there to the site and do it themselves, we're going to do it for them. We're almost kind of like living, breathing urban legends, acting as like that for the audience. You know what I'm saying? Like Tim always says he acts as the avatar for the audience when he's on Spooky South Coast. In a lot of ways, you know, so if I can steal his shit, in a lot of ways, you know, Natalie and I are going out there and we're saying, hey, have you heard this story? It happens in your town. It happens right at this site right here too. Let's together do it, the ritual that's connected to it, and see what happens. And most times nothing happens, but that's not the point. The point is that we went out there and we experienced it, and it gives us an opportunity to tell all the different stories are about it. And hopefully some of that involves then telling some of the history of that location too.
Wow, there you go. That was passionate. Nice.
Yeah, thank you. No, I mean, it's a cool thing because, like you were saying earlier, the expectation of what we need to have at the end of the day, and the funny thing is, like, we've gotten really good feedback. Like, I think sometimes just her and I sitting down talking about a really interesting story, talking about what it might mean, going to some place, and then some people, you know, then someone will turn around and say to me, like, wow, you guys sound really good together. It sounds really good. And I'm like, it's just us sitting around talking, you know? And it was interesting that last week her and I hit the road and we went through, I think, a total of eight states in a week looking for these, trying to track down these different haunted locations and urban legends. And we had a following. So we did an urban legend. It was an area where we were supposed to put a, you know, it was a like your traditional urban legend about the devil is here. This is where the devil landed. In this case, he ran around in circles trying to think of evil things to do. If you put something in the middle of the circle, it gets thrown out, right? And so we put something in the circle, right? And so we're like, okay, we're putting this thing in the circle. We're leaving now. We're going to go do some other stuff, and, you know, we'll report back later what happened. Well, we ended up getting involved in something else. We never posted what happened. All of a sudden, people started hitting it up. Hey, what happened? Did it get thrown out of the circle? Did it get up thrown? And I think that that story, you know, maybe that's proof of the paranormal, and that's what they're involved with. But I just think it was like, you know, these urban legends end on cliffhangers. And I think people want to kind of like breathe in that stuff, and they kind of want to experience it. And that's what her and I do as we go out.
Just remember, Chris, the spin of an entire summer of who shot JR was way more interesting than finding out who actually shot JR.
Right, exactly.
This is the build up to the mystery is almost always almost the big reveal is almost always
I was gonna say, Tim, to bring it back to wrestling, sometimes it's way more interesting to be the guy chasing the title than to actually be the guy that holds the title, you know?
Exactly. That's absolutely true. That's old school wrestling like 101. Yeah. The money's in the chase.
Right.
Well, on that note, I appreciate you guys have gone way out of your way to put this one together. I know Chris is on vacation. He's up here in the hinterlands of New England. I don't know how long you're here or anything about that, Chris, but, you know, if you're around for a while, give me a shout sometime, you know, in the next week or whatever, and we'll go get beers if you want, for sure. And I know Tim's hanging out at his radio studio at the radio station. So these guys went above and beyond here to make this happen, and I really appreciate it. And I love this conversation, man. It's like we just did the intros, fumbled all over each other trying to get these fucking phone lines straightened out, and then just immediately proceeded to start smashing the fourth wall and just did that for 2 hours. So I can't thank you enough, you know. It was awesome. I really enjoyed it a lot. So thanks and best of luck.
I really appreciate it,
you know. Oh, my pleasure, man. My pleasure. And like I said, you guys went above and beyond, and you were on my short list because I knew we'd have a conversation like this, but I didn't think it would be this. You know, I thought it would be kind of thing we got into at the end of the show. It's like, all right, now let's talk shit about how fucked up things are. But this was like, we just went right into it, and I really appreciate that, guys. So thank
and
you
I just
so
want
much.
To take this
and,
I just want to take the opportunity to say that I think this season has kicked ass. Like, I've been really enjoying the shows that you've been having this season, and your all-star guest list, until you lowered your standards and had us on tonight, your guest list has been crazy. So so I just want to compliment you on the great work that you're doing this season. And I usually don't do that when I'm on a radio show.
Oh,
hey,
thanks, man.
The hosts, so consider yourself lucky that we're praising you instead of you know, talking down to you like we do to most hosts.
Yeah, there you go.
I heard how I...
Well, I do appreciate it, and you know, let's all be in touch off the air, and you know, if we can't get together this time around, I know Tim, you and I are hoping to put something together for Labor Day and exploring the Bridgewater Triangle with my buddy coming in from out of town. But we'll all hopefully cross paths again in the future.
Right, I'll try to bring along the Codfather too for you.
Oh God, yeah. Please don't. Yeah. I'm going to want like a separate New Bedford tour just to see all the different all the different haunts. Oh my God. All right. Well, I'll let you guys get back to your respective lives. I really do appreciate you guys taking this time out to do the show, cuz like I said, Chris is on vacation, folks, and Tim's at work. So we went back to work to use the studio. So, you know, they really went above and beyond, and I really do appreciate it. So thank you, guys. Good night, and let's all talk soon.
All right, man.
Have a great night.
All right, folks, there you go. That was Tim Weisberg and Chris Balzano. We didn't even get into haunted objects. That's crazy. That's funny. We didn't even talk about the realm of haunted objects, but, of course, they are the authors of Haunted Objects. And they have a ton of stuff. Let me do the websites again. Chris Balzano is trippingonlegends.wordpress.com. And Tim Weisberg is spookysouthcoast.com. And longtime friends, good guys. And like I said, I just loved how once we figured out how to get everybody on the show at the same time, we just proceeded to start smashing the fourth wall and trying to get to the bottom of all this stuff in a different way. And that's what this program is all about. And on that note, next week on the show, I posted a little grumpy post about ufology and the state of ufological writing online over the weekend that even I later was like, ah, geez, I'm an asshole. I shouldn't have been so grumpy. But a lot of it was sort of through conversations with my friend Jack Brewer on Twitter. Many people are aware of Jack Brewer's work at the UFO Trail. He's also wrote a book, I believe it's called The Grays Were Framed, which we'll be talking about on the show next week. And we'll just be talking about the shittiness of ufology and all the problems with ufology. And if you think I got to bitch a lot during the Trump episode a couple of weeks ago, well, strap yourself in, because I've got a lot of things to complain about when it comes to ufology. And I realize we haven't done a UFO episode in a long time, and who the fuck wants to hear about Rendlesham for the 30th time, and who wants to revisit Roswell, and who wants to talk about Disclosure? Nobody. I want to talk about, you know, how everybody just keeps falling over themselves to declare ufology dead. It's like, enough's enough, man. We get the point. Ufology's dead. We're beating a dead horse that is ufology is dead. And there's a lot of issues surrounding that idea and the problems of ufology. We'll get into that. We're going to get into a lot of the nefarious aspects of ufologists doing bad things. Stan Romanek. Who else? We'll get into Emma Woods, I'm sure. We'll talk about paranormal podcasters spamming people with email, begging for money. We're going to get into that whole brewing scandal. And we'll talk about a whole bunch of other stuff. So we'll talk about, you know, the problems of ufology and the real fucking problems of ufology with Jack Brewer, who I consider one, alongside the incomparable UFO Watchdog. I consider Jack Brewer, if UFO Watchdog didn't have the name, I would call Jack Brewer the UFO Watchdog. That's, you know, how tenacious he is as far as rooting out the bullshit and the scam artists and the con artists. So we're going to deal with all that on the next edition of BOA Audio. And guess what? It's going to be next week, Tuesday, July 25th at 9 p.m. You can almost set your watch finally by this program. Tuesday, 9 p.m. next week, Jack Brewer, the UFO Trail, and The Grays Were Framed. That's on But All of America. Tune in then, my friends. And on that note, I believe we are done for the evening. Thank you all for listening, my friends. Thanks to all the folks in the chat room. Until next time, this is Tim Badal. Thank you once again for listening and signing off.